Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Save the post office a nationwide call-in. As unemployment money runs out, jobless claims going up, and if you're working, wages are going down. And today on the show, Homestead Steel, the final 10 years, and Steelworkers President Tom Conway. Good afternoon and welcome to the Friday, July 24th edition of America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And we ask that you please subscribe and give us a good rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. Also, Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there, AWF Union Podcast. We have 2 guests on the show today. We are going to start things off with Mike Stout. Mike is author of a book, Homestead Steel Mill, The Final 10 Years. It's a story of Local 1397 and the fight for union democracy. And this is one interesting guy. He started out as a musician, singer-songwriter at the age of 18, moved to New York City, even played in Greenwich Village at a couple of local clubs there. And then when the oil crisis and economic downturn occurred in the early 1970s, he decided to get involved in the labor movement. Took a job at Homestead Steel, which is a giant mill outside of Pittsburgh. And that's where he worked for 10 years. And I'll tell you, he had one heck of a ride there. He rose to become the head local union grievance man. In fact, they called him the world's grievance man. This guy was pretty sharp. With the collapse of the steel industry in the mid-1980s, Mike organized and fought for workers' rights. Now, this is a guy that had only a high school education, and he ended up taking on U.S. Steel's high-paid corporate lawyers in arbitration and in court. And you know what the result was? He won more than $10 million in pensions, severance, and back pay for some 3,000 workers who lost their jobs there. And this is a legendary plant. If you get an opportunity, just Google the Homestead Steel Mill, and it'll take you back to 1892. That was a year of a very, very bloody battle. At that time, Andrew Carnegie owned the plant. And workers went on strike because they were treated like crap. And there was a fight between the workers and about 300 Pinkerton guards. It was ugly. It was really, really, really ugly. So the plant is shut down. In fact, how ironic this is, tomorrow, July 25th, it'll be 34 years for the last day that plant was in operation. So Mike Stout's going to be our first guest to talk about this. Then we're going to join Tom Conway, who is the president of the United Steelworkers. And the Steelworkers, as you should know, is a sponsor of this broadcast. Tom's going to reflect on what happened there and what that means to all steelworkers. And this is very near and dear to me. I've said this on the show many, many times. My dad was a steelworker. My uncle worked at the old Alcoa plant. I mean, we have a lot of connections to the steel industry. I worked a couple of summers with my dad, and I couldn't for the life of me think how he was able to do that for 42 years. 42 years. Unbelievable. Local 1298 in Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah, remember those days really, really well. So Tom's going to reflect on that and also talk about Joe Biden's plan to rebuild America and buy American products like steel. Tom's also going to reflect on some of the posts that he has been blogging about. Boy, I tell you, he is a ferocious blogger. And one of them is titled The Pirates of the Pandemic. He writes that COVID-19 has killed at least 146,000 Americans, infected more than 4 million others, and sent the nation's unemployment rate soaring to the highest level since the Great Depression. So what are the consequences? Well, you got people like Jeff Bezos, already the world's wealthiest person, getting richer. I didn't realize this. His fortune went up $36 billion. $36 billion increase in 11 weeks. Then he talks about the CARES Act, which was passed in March and signed into law, which gave us some stimulus money, the $1,200 checks. But buried in that legislation was a giveaway to millionaires and billionaires. 43,000 of the nation's richest people got an average tax break in the CARES Act of $1.6 million each. Tom writes, this corporate charity allows real estate developers, hedge fund owners, and other financiers to use business losses from past years, losses that have nothing to do with the virus, okay, to get tax refunds. Unbelievable. So Tom Conway, president of the United Steelworkers, will be joining us as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, yesterday was a significant day for the Postal Service. It was Save the Post Office Day. It was a call to action, more or less, to get people to help out the post office because it's running out of money. By the end of September, it's going to be broke. And this drive, and there's been several in the past couple of months, was spearheaded by the American Postal Workers Union, led by President Mark Diamonstein, urging union members and allies to call the Senate as part of a day of action to save the Postal Service. APWU.org, if you want to get some more information on that. Meanwhile, just days before the end of an enhanced unemployment benefit, the nation got another dose of bad news yesterday. The number of laid-off workers seeking jobless benefits last week, this is just last week, rose for the first time since late March. Without extra aid, nearly 30 million unemployed people could be struggling to pay rent, utilities, or other bills, and economists worry that overall consumer spending will drop, and that's going to have a profound effect. Altogether, more than 1.4 million people applied for jobless benefits. The Labor Department said this was last week, up from 1.3 million the previous week. This is the first increase since March, the 18th straight week that has topped 1 million. And the extra $600 in weekly unemployment benefits provided by the federal government on top of whatever states provide expires this weekend. In the meantime, for millions of Americans who managed to hold on to their jobs during the crisis, widespread wage cuts will have a lasting impact on their incomes. Many employers slash wages on what was expected to be a temporary basis, but as the virus continues to spread, the cuts could turn permanent. Now, various estimates put the number of workers experiencing pay cuts somewhere between 4 and 7 million. Many more workers have seen paychecks decrease due to cuts in hours and reduction in overtime. The pay cuts are mostly affecting workers in white-collar industries, according to one study analyzing data from the payroll company ADP. Now, the economists say it's difficult to expect wages to rise at this point with so much of the economy remaining shuttered and with consumers too concerned about risk to resume regular spending behavior. And one more story here. Whole Foods employees have filed a class action lawsuit alleging the company, again, this is owned by Amazon, violated federal employment anti-discrimination law when it punished workers for wearing Black Lives Matter mask apparel and pins to work. The lawsuit alleges employees were sent home without pay, subjected to corrective discipline, and threatened with the loss of their jobs for refusing to remove the items. One worker, by the way, was fired from her job. This was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, for wearing a Black Lives Matter mask. The suit alleges that Whole Foods did not require employees to remove masks and apparel supporting other causes like gay rights. The suit comes as companies are under increasing pressure from consumers to allow workers to express support for Black Lives Matter. By the way, Starbucks recently reversed course on this issue after they got hit with a lot of criticism. I guess it's just going to take some time for Whole Foods. Maybe a class action lawsuit will change their opinion. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment on Homestead Steel, the final 10 years. Coming up next. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
For over 20 years, organized labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for communications and events needs. Because BMA knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to help unions capture market share, conduct marketing campaigns, partake in political education, promote labor management, organize membership development, and support issues such as prevailing wage, project labor agreements, responsible contracting, and workforce training. They also plan and produce special events such as conventions, conferences, and anniversary celebrations. The BMA Media Group, marketing union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit bmamedia.com. That's www.bmamedia.com for all the labor tools you need to move your union into the future.
Part union newsletter, part industry trade magazine. The Labor Citizen provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter to the hard-working members of Ohio's labor trades. Building trades unions that subscribe to the Labor Citizen guarantee their members receive a monthly report crafted by their own union leaders, along with interesting feature stories and news relevant to Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to active and retired members from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the news and issues important to Ohio's labor trades anywhere. And the only way you can have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
This is America's Workforce.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget our Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there, AWF Union Podcast. We're having some difficulty lining up with Mike Stout. Mike is author of a book, Homestead Steel Mill, The Final 10 Years. It's about Steelworkers Local 1397. And the fight for union democracy. A little background on Homestead Steel. It was the largest steelworks in America at the time. It was located on the Monongahela River at Homestead, Pennsylvania. The company developed in the 19th century as an extensive plant served by coal and iron fields and a railway over 400 miles long, as well as a line of lake steamships. The works were the site of one of the more serious labor disputes in U.S. history, which I reflected on at the beginning of the show. It was the Homestead Strike of 1892. The steelworks were first constructed in 1881. Andrew Carnegie bought Homestead Steel in 1883 and then integrated it into the Carnegie Steel Company. For many years, Homestead Works was the largest steel mill in the world. Well, a series of industrial disputes over wages, working hours, and contracts occurred in the early years of the works, leading to the strike June 30th of 1892. And boy, that was a heck of a strike. It went on for about 6 months, culminating in a battle between strikers and private security agents a month later. One of the most violent disputes in U.S. labor history. Well, in 1896, Carnegie built the Carnegie Library of Homestead as part of concessions to the striking workers. And in 1901, he sold the operation to U.S. Steel. Well, Mike worked there from 1977 until it closed. It closed in 1986. And you got to think about how big steel was in America at that time. The American Iron and Steel Institute found employment in the steel industry actually peaked in 1953, ironically, the year I was born. At that time, 650,000 employees. You go, so that's 1953. You go to 1980, that number from 650,000 dropped to 400,000. 4 years later, it dropped to 236,000. And then in 2015, 5 years ago, down to 142,000. From 1980 to 1988, U.S. Steel shuttered the seven least efficient of its 12 steel mills and slashed its industrial workforce from 75,000 employees to just 20,000. And Mike talks in the book about how the big boys, especially on Wall Street, pushed the steel industry to cut their staff, cut employees, and make their mills more profitable. That's a big part of his book, and it's unfortunate that we're not able to link up with him. As I indicated, he is a musician. He's been writing songs and singing since the age of 18. And when the mill shut down in the late 80s, Mike again picked up his guitar and began writing with a vengeance, actually putting together more than 150 songs over the past 30 years and putting out 15 CDs on his independent label, Blue Collar Records. Blue Collar Records, a staple at labor, environmental, and anti-war rallies, picket lines, and union conventions throughout the country since the late 1980s. He traveled to Europe in 2002, performing in the coal and steel regions in Western Germany, as well as Poland and the Czech Republic. He has since returned and toured Europe 8 more times, performing in clubs, music festivals, and rallies, including one in Frankfurt, Germany, for more than 40,000 people. That was 11 years ago. I'll tell you, interesting guy, really interesting guy. I figured this is a good opportunity to play a little bit of his music. And if you go to YouTube, there's a lot of stuff posted there. Just post Mike Stout. Just Google Mike Stout, and you'll see a bunch of stuff come up. Let's listen to this song real quick. Big Brother's Watching You. This is Mike Stout and the Human Union.
I'd like to do a little song. I'd like to dedicate this song to our brothers in the NSA. It's called Big Brother's Watching.
Big Brother's watching, he's got you in his sights. Big Brother's watching via some giant satellite. He's got the green light to tap your phone, sneak and peek inside your house when nobody's home. Check your credit cards, monitor your email. Got the authority to do what? Big Brother's watching, he's lurking in the wings.
is watching, she ain't missing a thing. Surgeon seizure without restraint, you're fair game if you dare to dissent. Don't need a warrant or no court order. The Bill of Rights just got a whole lot shorter. You say to me, how can this be? I can't believe they call this democracy. Orwell and Huxley must be laughing in their grave. You don't even know he's here. Big Brother's watching, wants to numb you with fear. Civil liberties disappearing fast. Right to privacy, a thing of the past. Total surveillance is the order of the day. You'll see what I mean when you get in the way. You better pay attention, 'cause somewhere down the line, it'll be your turn, it's a matter of time. Just ask Mr. Snowden and whistleblowers like him. They tried to warn us time and time again. Big Brother's watching. Big Brother's watching you, you. Big Brother's watching.
Again, that's just a sampling of Mike Stout, who we try to line up for the show today. How unfortunate. Mike is author of the book Homestead Steel Mill, The Final 10 Years, a story of Local 1397 and the fight for union democracy. If you want to get a copy of the book, just Google Mike Stout, Homestead Steel, and it's available on pmpress.org, pmpress.org. They do a lot of alternative publications there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tom Conway, president of the United Steelworkers, right here on America's Workforce. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
This special message goes out to all veterans and dependents of veterans who are living in Cuyahoga County. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission proudly provides a wide variety of services and assistance, including the following: filing VA claims, helping obtain disability or widow pensions, assistance obtaining military records, memorial affairs, social work, rent or mortgage assistance, utility bills, food, clothing and hygiene, and VA medical transportation. For more information about these services or your eligibility, call 1-844-405-VETS. That's 1-844-405-8387. Or go online to CuyahogaVets.org. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission. Veterans helping veterans since 1886.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro, 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number, 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce. And don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us right there, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one and welcome one of the great sponsors of this broadcast, the United Steelworkers, Tom Conway, International President, joining us on our live line. Tom, how are we faring today in this new normal?
We're doing good. It's a different way to operate. And, you know, in some ways, people are having to learn a lot of new tricks, and the union is kind of doing a lot of Zoom calls and different technology, and we've shifted our education program to be largely sort of online and live online. And we're, you know, the economy is hitting the steelworker union like everyone else, and particularly in manufacturing. But look, the union is functioning. We're out there. Our staff are working closely with our local unions and our headquarters and education and communication teams and safety and health experts are on the ground and engaged. So, you know, look, we've been through tough periods before. We're going to come through this one. If we had a government that would just sort of get off its ass and do something, it would just help clear the confusion as we're, you know, we're going into the reopening schools and having those discussions, and everybody wants to be at work, and how are you going to deal with child care issues? But, you know, how do you send your kids into such uncertainty and then bring them home, and you got, you know, parents living at home. This is a difficult, different times for people. So, you know, we're faring well. We're holding up well. But every day it's a different problem, and you just approach the day as you solve today's problem and move on to the next one.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's times like this when you look back at history, at labor history. We were supposed to have Mike Stout on the show today. We will rearrange another time with him. Mike is a hardcore steel worker, and he wrote the book, and I understand you got a draft copy, Homestead Steel Mill, The Final 10 Years. This is about Local 1397. What a historic plant here. And when you talk about the pandemic that we're in, think about the year 1892 and what those steelworkers went through in that in that long and bitter and tragic strike. I mean, wow. I would imagine, I guess you thumbed through some of the book. Maybe you can reflect on that era in labor history for us today, Tom.
Yeah, look, it really is an important part of the history of labor unions in America. Homestead sort of stands out that way, and particularly in the steelworker union, going back to the early days of the Homestead strike and the Pinkertons and what went on there, and sort of this magnificent industrial complex at the time in terms of its sheer size and what it could do. And to see it now, there's a shopping mall on the site of the Homestead Mill, and there's an old pump house where this battle of Homestead took place between the workforce and the community and the Pinkertons and the company. And so, you know, we use it as a historical reference point. And when we bring steelworkers in from around the country and run them in our education programs, and we have a sort of a four-year scholarship program, one of the, in the first year, one of the places we take them is to that pump house and to that setting and and have them understand and reflect on what Homestead meant. So, yeah, I've had Mike's book for a while. You know, Mike's been sort of a labor troubadour. There aren't many people left who write labor music and keep sort of the labor songs going. There's not many Woody Guthries left out there.
No, not at
so
all.
So Mike's an artist in that regard. But his book is interesting, and the time period he writes about is really a difficult time from, you know, late 70s to the late 80s, and what was going on in the industry and the impact of imports, the impact of technology, and sort of the militarization or the militancy that grew up within that local in particular, but a lot of other locals across the Mon Valley region and Youngstown and in Chicago and everywhere else where the impact of deindustrialization was being felt, and workers in some ways began to really fight back against that. And it took place both inside the union, against the companies, with the government, and you know, really was sort of a historic time. So the Homestead local union in some ways became a centerpiece for that within the Pittsburgh region.
Yeah. Tom, when you take people to that site and you talk to them about the history, what kind of reaction do you get? Because that was, as you indicated, a different time in America. I'm just wondering if they grasp, especially the young folks today, they grasp what labor did to get where we are today. I'm just wondering about that part. What's your thoughts on
Look,
that?
I think the people we take, and you know, we have a sort of a thriving next generation program we're running throughout the union. So I think young people do sort of get it, and they're both respectful of it and understand it in its context and in its time. But I think what's more chilling for them in some ways is that the events of Homestead and what was going on and what was underneath it and the employers' sort of approach to the workforce is not much different than what you see in a lot of places today. And so with the steady decline of the density rate of private unions or in the private sector and employers' sort of opportunistic approach to that, the same as you'll see it during this COVID period and this sense of, well, we're going to let no crisis go without exploiting it somehow. I think they recognize may have been very different times and very different years and 100 years between us, but things are not that different. And so the need to do things collectively and to work together and to form and build unions is still as essential as ever. And I think when you help them understand the context of the labor movement in today's terms, it's eye-opening for them. I think there's a lot of value for them when they go and visit this site.
Yeah. I want to reflect on Chapter 12 in the book here, and it brings up the, I guess, David Roderick took over. Chairman of U.S. Steel. I guess you know this guy, huh?
Well, you know, in some ways, the industry had always been sort of run by engineers. And so engineers would move themselves into what's now called the C-suite or the top jobs. But in some ways, this was a departure. Roderick was kind of a finance guy. And I remember references to him as being the ugly American. And there was a time when the management would say, well, we're not in the business of making steel. We're in the business of making money. Mm-hmm. And that became an approach for them and was somewhat departed from the traditions of steelmaking and how it was done and how people kind of lived in those communities together. Roderick was sort of a sea change moment there at U.S. Steel. And at the time, I worked at Bethlehem Steel, was a mill right there. So we were all very aware of what was going on with our brother and sisters at U.S. Steel and those locals. But I wasn't working directly for Roderick. We had our own problems at the time.
Yeah, they talk about U.S. Steel at the time, I guess it was 1980, they lost over $500 million. So then the Wall Street people come in. And they said, well, what we got to do is strip it down to cash and just, cut the workforce right. down. Tens of thousands of employees pretty much lost their jobs after Wall Street. And Tom, we see that all the time. I mean, it's happening every day. I mean, it's the same thing.
Now it's just that's the standard playbook now, right? When the company gets in trouble, the first thing you do and. Look, some of these companies, they're made up of three sort of big moving parts. It's their energy costs, it's the cost of their inputs, and it's their labor costs. And the labor cost now is not even equal to the other two. And labor is generally, 15% of their overall cost. But it's the easiest thing for them to do. And so it's the first thing they look to. And it's short-sighted, and in many times they end up having to circle back around and fix it at even more costs. And so you lose skills, you lose people who knew how to do things, and you're always restarting. But when somebody on Wall Street who's sitting there with some model program and says, look, you can save cash by cutting 15% of your workforce, they jump to it, and frankly, part of the problem is that in America, on every quarter, some CEO's got to get on a quarterly investors call and satisfy these group of investors who just want a return, and they don't care about longevity of the enterprise or the company or a five-year plan or an investment plan. They just want to know, did you outperform this quarter against last quarter? And so it drives this sort of insatiable cost, get out costs at any cost, regardless of the harm you do to the company. And I think we see that all the time. And now they've figured out how to incent those bosses to do it through programs and pay systems that pay them well to do this to their companies. It's a really dismaying form of capitalism in the U.S.
Yeah. And as a result, it's hollowed out the middle class. That's the sad part about this. Tom, I got to take a quick break. You can stay with us for another segment here on America's Workforce.
Yep, I'm fine. Flash.
Very good. USW.org is a website. Tom Conway, International President of the Steelworkers, proud sponsor, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. We'll continue the conversation right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
Lyonov, The Laborers International Union of North America is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
If it impacts the livelihood of Ohio's labor trades, you'll find it in the Labor Citizen. America's oldest labor newspaper still provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter most to Ohio's union construction industry. Each edition includes information many unions use to send out in a monthly newsletter, along with an interesting mix of feature stories and news. The Labor Citizen is a growing force for Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to the active members and retirees from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find this level of coverage anywhere else. But the only way to have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trade union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
I'm Andrew Saul, Commissioner of Social Security. Beware of threatening calls from telephone scammers pretending to be government employees. These calls are not from us. Hang up and report the call at oig.ssa.gov.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. And we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and online, awfradio.com. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Tom Conway, president of the United Steelworkers, usw.org is a website. You are one heck of a blogger. I've been picking up some of your blogs here. One was on, protecting public workers. You did one on manufacturing muscle. What one that caught my attention? The pirates of the pandemic. You know, here we are. Well, we've got, we have the Heroes Act, which hasn't gone anywhere.
Right.
But the CARES Act, it was a step in the right direction. People got $1,200 checks. But you point out here that for some odd reason, the millionaires and the billionaires somehow picked up some money buried in the bill. I didn't realize this, Tom. Buried in the CARES Act. We're going back to March. 43,000 of the nation's richest people got an average tax break of $1.6 million each. I mean, why are we doing this kind of thing?
It's just amazing. And I think buried is the right word. So no one hears about this. You see the headlines and you think, okay, look, we've got to try and get some cash into both people's homes and pockets. And some of these small businesses who really are not going to be able to stretch their way through that. But when you do those kind of programs and when legislation comes out of Washington, you really do need to read it carefully and understand who's going to benefit and how. And so there has been this group of well-off companies that aren't nearly struggling the way they would have you believe, and people who are literally floating around on a yacht somewhere and applied for government assistance for their company and people with tons of resource and tons of money who have been able to tap into this and sort of like the bureaucracy of the of the government seems to not either be able to catch it or slow it down. And I've seen some companies who were approached by a subcommittee of Congress saying, look, we've looked at you and you're hardly what we had in mind when we passed this. But look, by design, there's just a ton of money in there for a lot of people who are kind of not in need of it. And, you know, here we're sitting, we're looking at the end of the month, and the $600 is scheduled to expire, and and people who are really going to find themselves in a desperate situation. And, you know, yesterday I read a story about the cost of rents and housing are just sort of skyrocketing. And people are, we still have this tremendous number of people out of work. And we're headed for a disaster without a program in place other than sort of leave it all to the states. And so, yeah, when these pandemics come up and whenever there's government money that's going to get out there and start sloshing around, you really do need to dig into it and find out, okay, where's it going and who's it going to help? And is it going to do something that's societal, makes some sense? Are we going to do some infrastructure work? Are we going to rebuild things? I mean, we give all this money to this group of millionaires and we have these dams collapse in the middle of Michigan and literally flood these towns under 25 feet of water, and very little assistance goes in there to help people. Mm-hmm. And it's a failed infrastructure that had been known for 20 years to be in deficit condition. And instead, you know, this sort of stuff goes on. So, yeah, there's been a lot of misuse of this kind of money, and we've got to do a better job. You know, you can't just have your buddies who had companies and friends of the Trump administration lining up for this, and there's been a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about moving forward here. And I notice on your homepage, you talk a lot about Joe Biden's plan to rebuild America by American. I mean, that's what we have to do. We talk a whole lot. I'm glad you brought up infrastructure. We have a big audience of the building trades, and we talk a whole lot about the jobs that can be created if we would move forward. And there's legislation. I mean, the House has passed legislation that would come up with money for that. Apparently, it's not going anywhere in the Senate. We know that story. We talk about it every day here on America's Workforce. But I'd like to get your take on what Biden wants to do if he becomes president. What do you think here?
Look, I think when you look at Biden's recent announcements in the last couple of weeks, and he's rolled out very specific details about how he wants to invest, how much he wants to invest, where he wants to place it. And almost in every instance, he talks about Buy American, and that campaign, and Joe Biden seems to have understood and have figured out that when this pandemic hit America, we were completely unprepared. Our supply chain was non-existent. We couldn't make masks. We can't make the medicines that we need. We couldn't supply the gowns. We couldn't supply ventilators. And Americans are dying left and right. And America was forced, the states were forced to go and individually buy from countries and buy from China and other locations and bid against each other in this insane bidding war because America had allowed its medical supply chain to go offshore and it just wasn't there. And so I think that has been eye-opening for a lot of people. And I think the campaign has figured out that not only existed with medical supplies, but it exists across our economy where globalization has allowed America to slip into a place where we don't make things here anymore. And if the government can't use its tax revenue to drive that system and then pull private sectors along with it, then we're not going to get back on our feet. We're not going to recover from this. So I think Biden smartly recognizes that America has to now take a look at itself and rebuild itself in such a way that the government drives it, it incubates businesses, it helps businesses thrive, it helps markets to be created here, and that people will build. And Americans instinctively agree that using our own tax money to support our own nation's economy is sort of a right-minded thing to do. And I think, frankly, that was the promise of Trump in 2016, but he didn't get it done. And it was all theatrics, and it was a lot of sort of populism without real meaning, and there's not a lot of work to point to that's been brought back here. And when it has come back, manufacturing jobs, they just don't want to pay for them. You know, you jobs that used to pay $23-25 an hour, they're bringing them back at $14-15 if they are coming back. And you can't just have the kind of American economy that thrives if you're not willing to do it the right way. So I think Biden's approach is very, very all in. It's strategic. It understands how to rebuild it. And I think it's sort of reflective of, you know, our American economy. If you think about it, without our interstate system and the investment that America made in building a system of highways and roads that we could transport commerce, that we could build an auto industry, that we could build a trucking industry, and all that goes with that, that's the kind of investment America needs to make in itself. And I think Biden gets that. And that's the approach we're going to see, particularly in the Midwest manufacturing states. So it's not just about talking about Trump's problems and all that there is about Donald Trump as a person that's offensive. It's a positive program about what we have to do going forward. And so, you know, that's the way Joe answered his questionnaires to us. The president failed to answer them or respond to them. And I think that's why the steelworkers have endorsed them.
So you reached out to Trump then? You tried to get an answer from him on this, right?
Look, we on every federal candidate, we sent them a detailed questionnaire and said there are five issues. And they have to do with what's important to labor. You know, how do you feel about unions? How do you feel about investment in infrastructure? How do you feel about health care? How do you feel about retirees and pensions and the pension system going forward? And we got no response from the Trump campaign. And we got a very detailed response, which I published throughout the union, from the Biden campaign, and answered every question thoughtfully. And it's what drove our decision. And we're going to use that questionnaire. And we've shared that with our members about how the union makes its decision on labor issues and worker issues about who we're going to support. And so, you know, there's an argument that, well, the union always supports Democrats. Look, the union, we will support who supports us. And I think that is the measure that we're using in this case. And Biden's campaign clearly is head and shoulders above the Trump administration in that regard.
Well, Tom, you did what you had to do. At least you reached out and you got a pretty darn good answer from Joe Biden. So we'll see what happens here in the next coming months. The big date, of course, is November 3rd. We all should know that by now. Hey, my friend, you take care. Be safe. Thanks for the extra time. Keep up the fight. And we appreciate the sponsorship from the steelworkers. OK.
All right, buddy. It's good always talking to you, Wes.
Take care. Tom Conway, president of the United Steelworkers, USW.org. Want to get some more information? Do check out those blogs from Tom Conway. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, how the middle class changed America, and the latest from the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a wonderful and safe weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group.
find out more information online at labortools.com.